If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
If you think about popping the question, need to party your way on over to Robert Irwin Jewelers. See our man, Howie. He is going to take care of you. He has been doing this, he and his family, for 40 years. Four decades. So he knows what he's doing. And he's so good, and I'm not exaggerating when I tell this story, he's so good at what he does, you're going to get it at a price that's going to blow you away. You might start sweating. You might ask, is this real? How are you making money if you sell it to me for this? That's how I felt when I went there. I don't know about you. But Howie knows, like I said, he knows what he's doing. If he gives you a great deal, the odds are, the likelihood is, you're going to come back, right? Because you got a good deal and you love the experience itself. And that's always been the case when I've gone. It's been the case for just about everybody. They know what they're doing when it comes to engagement rings, and they've got all the options, plus the perks. You get the engagement ring. You got free ring sizing for life should that finger size change. You don't have to worry about it. Also, jewelry spa service for life, and that's good stuff. Stone tightening, buffing, polishing, ultrasonic cleaning, all of that for life. And then the payment options. You've got plenty of them. Ask her now, pay later with financing like 24 months deferred interest or take up to 60 months to pay at a low APR. The point is just get to Howie, then he'll take care of you. Stop trying to answer questions you don't know the answers to. Let Howie answer them for you. You can even take in a picture of what she likes. Howie will make that thing. Now three locations, South Haven, Bartlett, and the brand new Diamond Showroom on Perkins Extended. Bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices, always at Robert Irwin Jewelers, online at rijewelers.com. All right, hour number three, bottom of the hour, we said we're very much hoping to talk to Tim Duncan, Memphis's Tim Duncan, Memphis's own graduate of Memphis and former New Orleans AD, is now back home as the new senior deputy athletics director hired by Ed Scott's. Great story, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to him bottom of the hour. Before we do that, though, something I've been meaning to get to all week because I got a chance to watch it this week. It's new. It's out on Netflix. It's called The Murder of Air McNair right now. It's part of a series, Untold, I think is a series that tells sports stories, some other things it touches on, and they had decided to make this feature about the murder of Steve McNair, which I'll be honest with you, I remember in terms of, you know, the shock.
Yep.
Remember, Steve, what I didn't quite remember was Steve was retired, right? He was.
Mm-hmm.
He had finished his playing career. And I don't know if you remember or where, if you can, a lot of times I have a hard time. You know, where were you in 2009? In this case, July 4th, 2009, Steve McNair, the former Titans quarterback who led him to a Super Bowl,
wow,
by the way, was found shot dead there in a Nashville apartment. And it was just first off, gruesome in terms of this was a murder where you have a gun on the scene, but you also had another body. You had the body of a 20-year-old girl,
mm-hmm,
at his feet. And so the details of this, when we start, what? Can't believe this happened and everything else. And so Netflix has done an hour-long documentary, and I've been saying it all week long. It left me feeling a certain kind of way. I'll tell you how it felt now. It left me wanting more, wanting to know more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's only so much you can do in an hour, but I'll be honest with you. When it ended, my wife asked, okay, when's part two? And I had to tell her, I was like, honey, that's it. Because I felt like, yeah, I don't know. Now they don't talk to Steve McNair's former wife, and you can understand why she perhaps turned them down. Steve McNair was murdered from what the police have determined at the hands of by his mistress. You know, a 21-year-old girl that he met at Dave and Buster's. And again, John had mentioned don't give spoilers. There's not because this is an old kid.
No,
there's not really spoilers.
Stuff we
there
know.
Were some new things, and I want you guys to watch it, so I won't touch on everything. There were some new things in there that you know, make you raise your eyebrow up in terms of, hey, maybe, was that question actually answered or not? But the one thing that I was wondering the entire time is, are they sure they got this figured out?
Right.
Because there were I don't know, other persons of interest involved, and they'll touch on them. But you don't feel like, I guess, at least for me, when I got to the end, I didn't feel like all my questions about it were answered, that there might still be some mm-hmm. possibilities here. But clearly, Nashville police moved on. The other thing about this documentary is they've got Jeff Fisher, the former Titans coach, as part of it. And he, you know, he talks about how he felt when he learned of his former quarterback's, you know, murder and everything else. But he spends the majority of the time with him. We spend it on a season that, you know what? I mean, we remember the end of it. We remember how the Titans came up 1 yard short. You were cheering for the Rams, I'm guessing, at that point.
Absolutely.
But they come up 1 yard short of winning that game. It was one of the most dramatic endings
that reach.
We've seen in Super Bowl history. Hey. What I didn't remember was how good the Titans had been at home that season and their inaugural season up in Nashville. This is after the move, the stadium. Was it Adelphia back then? I could be wrong
Sounds
on the name
right.
of it when it first opened up. But either way, that first season, they didn't lose at home.
No.
Like, they, you know, that when they first get to Nashville or whatever else, they're like, who's going to root for us? Everybody's already got their own teams. But because they won every single home game, and this would have been Steve McNair and Eddie George, the great Eddie George, who's now still the coach up at TSU, up in Nashville. You forget how good those guys were.
Yeah.
Nobody expected that McNair-led team to advance to the Super Bowl the way they did through the playoffs. I mean, upsetting folks and everything else. But the run they made, what I'm trying to say is I had forgotten how good Steve McNair was. I had forgotten how good that Titans team was with him and Eddie George just running over folks. And, man, he was. I mean, he was a Pro Bowl quarterback who I'm sure – like, and I'm not just going to say NFL players, but like a lot of men have second lives, third lives, and you kind of find out about that in this.
Yeah.
I mean, remember, you know, he was married, right. and he had kids. And so all of this coming out was not just devastating for his wife, but also embarrassing because it opened up what I'm sure she probably suspected but didn't want the rest of the world to know, which was the fact that Steven was out here playing the field, you know, and had a, as he called it, a chill spot. That's what this was, the apartment in Nashville. And so I would recommend it just in the sense of not so much for the you know, the murder itself or any extra details about that, but the going back just from the football side of things. And the, you know, it's funny, we talked about the Liza Fletcher story and how this new stadium gives us a chance to think about Liza in a different way, right? To think not about the gruesome way she was murdered or died, but to think about her life and the light that she was just about everywhere she went, in whatever role it was, as a soccer teammate, as a runner in the runner community, as a teacher, right? And Jeff did such a beautiful job with this, and Brooks had talked about this, the soccer coach over at Memphis. It's you want something else. We should remember the life as opposed to the ending, right? And that's how, because again, when you think of the name, of course you think of, you know, the gruesome murder, you know, Liza, how we were feeling afterwards, everything else, rather than the light that she was, you know? And so we're fortunate that we could get this soccer stadium in her name, and her family has obviously had a great deal. Back to the point, that's kind of how I was with McNair. I had forgotten, because of the gruesome way he died, I had kind of, that's when I thought of Steve McNair, it's kind of what I think about, the way he died. I had forgotten how great a player he was. And one of his teammates talked about that, man, we talk about Steve McNair and everybody just wants to talk about, you know, the tragic ending of his life. But people, because of that, and because it's so large, because the end looms so big in those cases, you don't talk as much about the life. In Liza's case, about the light she was, or in Steve McNair's case, how damn good a football player and leader he was. And so you're reminded of that in this, and I guess my encouraging folks to go watch it, if you spend that hour on it, you're reminded, man, of how good Steve McNair was. He was a good dude, man. Was fantastic at Alcorn State. Had a lot of question marks about whether he could do it at the NFL level, because you're coming from an HBCU level.
Yep.
And he went and proved them all wrong and, you know, went on to become one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL at the time. And I think won a co-MVP, I want to say, with Peyton Manning.
Yeah, it says NFL co-MVP that year in 2003 with Peyton was the other guy.
That's
who
what I'm saying.
Yeah.
When you win a co-MVP with Peyton Manning, you're right at the top. Like, he reached the pinnacle other than winning that Super Bowl, and we talked about him just being a yard short. And so,
would he have played in Memphis before he went to Nashville? Because he was with the Oilers and the Titans, so I'm assuming he would have been part of...
I think so, because they brought him up slowly. Yes, I believe so, because they brought him up behind Chris Chandler, I think it was. And I want to tell you.
When they made the move.
Yeah.
I'm putting you on the spot, but
well,
I wasn't here.
99 was the first year of Adelphia. What was it, 97 that they were in Memphis?
Yeah, that's right.
I think 97 is too early. I think Steve would have been drafted after that.
It says in this, Athletic wrote about it, and they say he was the.
Am I off on my timeline?
It says he was.
He played 13 seasons,
and they say Oilers/Titans and Baltimore Ravens is where he ended his career. So I forgot about the Baltimore Ravens part. Remember when he left Nashville, mm-hmm. he actually tried to get it going with the Ravens. He was very tough, though. Good quarterback.
Oh, dude, he was down there in 95. So, yes, he was a part of the move.
Yeah.
Yes, he was in Memphis.
God, I didn't realize it was that early.
Yeah, he got drafted. He was the third pick in 1995, and Fisher was the coach.
Yeah, so he'd have been in part of that transition.
Absolutely, because that season, I'm pretty sure, 97 was the season they were in Memphis. And so, man, he was here. He was here, passed through for that time.
That? So he would have been through Memphis.
Well, we still don't like Bud Adams for what he did.
No. You know? Did people go to those games?
A lot of Pittsburgh Steelers fans went to those games. That's who went, brother. Because again,
cool.
It's the same thing as it was initially for Nashville. And this is not our team,
right?
You can tell us it's our team now because it's got Tennessee on it. But we root for the Bears, we root for the 49ers, we root for the Pittsburgh Steelers. That's what this was a melting pot in terms of market for NFL fans. You throw a team in there, and you don't just automatically become a fan of the team without that fabric, without those ties and the memory. So for a while, I think the majority of it was the opposition's fans going to games. I still rag on the Titans because they got a lot of those now that still do. Titans fans love selling their tickets to the
year. Yes. Yeah. Well, Nashville forever will be like that. It's a bachelorette kind of a vibe. I mean, it's a great city. Memphis, I think, is better. I'm biased. But, it's not going to be like Dallas where everybody's a damn Cowboys fan. It's going to – or Chicago where – Most people that grow up around Chicago are Chicago football Bears fans. That Nashville, that ain't happening. It's going to be like a moulange, I guess, or like a group. Like when you go to a Titans game, I went to a Cowboys game over there.
Yeah.
There were way more Cowboys fans than Titans fans. This is about 2 years ago I went there.
About when I went with my dad a few years back, Bears fans ran the place.
Oh, yeah. It's all Bears fans when the Bears play.
It was a great opportunity for us to get in there, and it felt like
home. Absolutely. And until they're good.
And that's why I'm
maybe they'll get back to it, but, they're not good right now.
No, they're not. Real quick, there's another, and it has nothing to do with sports, but I saw it two nights ago, and I could not stop crying watching it. That's how emotional it was. You know how Sane was talking about? He's got a tear duct issue, he gets them. I looked like Sane during this documentary.
What was the show?
It's called...
this is a Netflix one, too?
It's called Daughters, and it's about... I've never seen anything like it. It is basically a documentary. I'm going to try to go back off my memory, but it is called Daughters.
Wow,
it's on 100% Netflix.
100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
It is moving, to say the least. If you come out of this with a dry eye, I would just... I'd question, man. I'd say, are you human?
Yeah.
So what they've done is there is a program called Date with Dad. And in this case, Dad is in prison. And what they have done, and I think this program now is going on, yes, I got that in front of me, 12 years, is bring the daughters of these men to the prison, and in some cases, the daughters as young as 5 years old, bring them to the prison to have a date, a dance with Dad. Okay? Now... I my wife was already in it. So when I jumped in, and again, as it usually happens, I have no intention of sticking with it. This is something my wife's watching. I'm going to leave the room. So I didn't catch all of it. So I'm not sure if we know everything that these inmates, in terms of what they've done to be in jail. And I think that's key, and I'll get to that. But what they do in this program is it's a weeks-long program. It's not just a deal where the daughters come in. You go through some sessions with a counselor, with this group of men, in preparation for this meeting with their daughters. Now, some of these men have been away for a long time, don't even know what their daughters look like at this point.
Maybe.
Some of these men have only been away for a few months, and right, it's the first contact in a few months. But my point, they go through this session of trying to get them ready for what this is going to be like, because here's the deal. They've set it up where the moms are not going to be in the room. Okay? Now, in some cases, the moms who, now obviously they've okayed this, but in some cases, the moms who have had some issues with the dads, probably arguments start all the time because you ain't taking care of business, you're not here, whatever else. So they've taken that element and the potential for a fight out of it by having the moms out of it. The moms have clearly agreed to let their daughters go in and see their fathers. Dude, you can see the emotion starts bubbling up when you see how serious these men who have obviously committed very serious crimes, some of them so much so that they should never be let out of jail. Back to the point, though, you can see how serious this is to them. Mm-hmm. Like, it's almost like this is freedom. This chance to touch, physical touch. Because you know one thing? Many prisons, I learned during this documentary, have now done away with in-person visits. Touch visits is what they call them for short.
Really?
Many prisons have done away with them. And your visits now are done by video. Right? And I don't know how much of that's a result of technology. COVID and all that change, you know, that's shutting things down.
We don't need it, so we're going to just cut it.
What I've learned is we've gone away from touch. So these men don't get touch visits.
Whoa.
And so this opportunity to have daughter in the same room, dressed up, they're putting the men in suits. Which are, you know, they're not going to be there in their prison guard with their prison number. We're going to put suits on you guys, ties, so that your daughter does not see a prisoner. Your daughter sees her daddy, okay? And as soon as these young ladies start walking down the hall, brother, the tears, anybody I'm watching, but I'm, if you're watching like I was or my wife was or the men themselves as they saw their beautiful daughters walk toward them, they were breaking down,
of course.
And so were their daughters as they got to them. But, man, let me tell you this. So they do this great job of, like, going through the room and capturing these moments of the, you know, back-and-forth conversations between a five-year-old and her, you know, she doesn't care what daddy's done. She's just happy to see him. And all of them just capture your heart. But the thing that moved me the most, and I'm telling you, I was a mess. I had to go get a tissue watching this whole thing. The thing that moved me the most was the end, because it was the question that you were asking yourself the entire time. A program like this, you wonder if it works. Works in this sense. Saw my daughter, now I got to do everything possible to get out. And when I get out, now I got to do everything possible to stay out.
Right.
Because that moment meant so much. It crystallized it for you, right? How much you're missed, how gone you really are. And so that's the question that you're asking yourself the entire time. Is this going to make the impression on these men that we hope that they'll correct their wrongs in terms of what they can at this point, be productive inmates, but then those that can get out, change their lives so that they don't go back in? Because what do you hear about prison on time? You learn how to become a better criminal. Half the time, our problem is they get out, they go right back in, because whether it's they can't find a job or whatever else, or it's just quicker to do crime again, they're going right back in. This is the thing that moved me the most, more so than the stories and emotion. The number that I saw was 95% of the men that have gotten out in this program have not gone back.
That's remarkable.
95%.
Wow. That's awesome. That is awesome.
I thought we're talking about 12 years, and I think it's
that's a good sample.
I'm not exactly sure how many prisons it is per year, but it's a good sample size.
Good sample.
And any improvement is good for all of us in that department in terms of guys not going back in, repeat offenders, the cycle that continues, affects generations of families for years. They can't get, a lot of these prisoners talked about how that was their situation. Their dad wasn't there. He was in prison when they were growing up. What does it do? A lot of cases going to lead down the same road.
Yeah.
This was trying to break the cycle, right? This program is trying to break the cycle. And when I saw that 95 pop up, the answer to my question, at least, again, It's just one program. It's not fixing the world. But when I saw that kind of impact, I thought, holy cow. Like, that's something we can all sort of relate to, root for. I don't care where you're from, what race you are, what your religion is improvement in man, improvement in your human self, and using feelings, using touch, using your family members to help with that process. I just, that one more so, if I'm recommending the two of them, I tell you, catch daughters. It's way more moving, and it leaves you feeling so encouraged about the power of some of these programs that you might think, okay, man, that's never gonna help anything. You can't fix the problem we got with too many black fathers, too many people, period, but too many black folks in prison. You can't fix, it's such a huge problem. Sometimes you just want to turn away. In this case, man, I salute, respect, burgers, whatever words you want to use. they are making an impact, and you saw it in a way in this documentary, again, called Daughters on Netflix, that I just, I tell you, it's not going to change your life, but it's going to give me an appreciation for some of the work that people are trying to do in these prisons.
I'm going to go check that out. I'd rather watch that than that Peterson thing.
That's fantastic. And again, I tell you, like, you know, some of these guys, like, they ain't getting out.
No,
I think in some of these cases, they don't tell you what they've done because they want to keep them human.
Right.
Okay? I mean, some prisoners don't deserve to get out.
Yeah, they're trying to, you know,
but these 95% in the 12 years of this program that have gotten out have stayed out. And I think that's not just a great Netflix doc. That's a great thing for our country. It's a great thing for the prison system. And it's a wonderful, wonderful documentary. All right, we got more work to do. We're going to hopefully talk to Tim Duncan, the senior deputy athletics director over Memphis. I love saying it because that means he's back home. Tim was a 4-year letter winner for the basketball team, played with Penny Hardaway before he went off into the business world, marketing world, and then he decided to get in college athletics. And that path has led him back home to Memphis here in town. Again, he was campus school back in the sixth grade, so I know he's happy to be back. Spent the last 5 years in New Orleans.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Talk to him when we get back. You listen to Jason and John.
Oh, you love to hear it, especially when it means what it means right now for this guy. His name is Tim Duncan, former New Orleans athletics director, now the new senior deputy AD at his alma mater, the University of Memphis. Kind enough to have carved out a little bit of time because I know he's extremely busy right now on his way, hopefully, up to Memphis. TD, congratulations, man.
Jason, thank you so much, man. I appreciate it. It's great to hear that fight song, man. It's been a while since I've had a chance to be able to celebrate it like this.
Well, you have known for a while how fond, not just me, you know, but my co-host, John, also our boss, Brad Carson, been of you for a long time. And for me, it goes back all the way to your Tigers days, obviously. So knowing how fond we are of you, I got to ask you, can we get that switch over to a 901 area code for what? Yeah, it's been a long time since you've had that 901, it feels like.
It has been a long time, man, and nothing makes my heart warmer than seeing a 901 flash across my screen. So, yeah, we'll have to do something about that for sure.
Tell me about this opportunity, and obviously Ed Scott, you know, he's responsible, brings you on, but just how it came about, Tim, when, you know, whether you thought it was possible to still get over here after Ed Scott's hired, how did it come about?
Yeah, man, I've known Ed for a while, you know, you know, one degree of separation within college athletics, and there's even a smaller degree of separations for, you know, athletic directors of color, for sure. So I've known him for a while and kind of admired him from far. We've, you know, socially kind of hung out at conferences and things of that nature. You know, we got to know each other a little bit better during the whole summer of COVID and George Floyd, when we created the Black Athletic Directors Network, and he was an AD, and I was an AD, and got a chance to know each other a little bit better then. But the origins of this story particularly came from when he got the job, I sent him a text and said, hey, man, you're the right person for this job, and I'm happy for you. And I just sent it because I try to do that with people that I know when they get, you know, an appointment, especially of this magnitude. So, you know, about 2 or 3 weeks later, he reached out to say, man, I have a role that is, you know, a deputy level role that, you know, I think it'd be great for you. I need someone who's, you know, been a veteran AD before that can come in and kind of solidify, you know, things that we're doing and be a voice when, you know, I'm not around. And you know, someone that's been a leader. And, you know, he thought that I would be that guy. And, you know, we talked a week or so on the phone, off and on, and he said, hey, Tim, why don't you come to Memphis, man? I want to talk to you in person. And he did that. He flew me to Memphis, and we met for dinner. And when I sat down and said, Tim, this is not an interview. This job is yours if you want it. Let's just talk to see, you know, if our philosophies align and, you know, how we would work together. And, you know, just like on any good date, when you're having great communication, you see the positive body language, the head nodding, you're completing each other's sentences, and that's how it was. So I feel, you know, very fortunate to he was confident enough to bring a guy who clearly has more ties to the city than he does. Yeah. To bring me back home and trust me with his, you know, first big-time AD job. Not that Morgan State isn't the big-time at all, but the American, just a higher-rated conference. And, you know, for him to bring me back is something I don't take lightly, and I'm going to bust my ass to help him and my alma mater succeed.
Oh, we know you will, and we're all thankful that he did so. And we saw it yesterday, and you can... You can fill us in a little bit more in terms of your primary duties. We know you're going to be in that basketball spot, right? And that will mean dealing with your not just dealing. You have a relationship with already, but in a way, and I'll just put it that way, you're going to be the boss of your former teammate in Penny Hardaway. But I want to touch too, Tim, and you can fill us in. But for these folks that are asking, you're going to be on the football side as well, I'm assuming, right? You don't get that high a gig, and you ain't at football games and doing football stuff as well, I'm assuming.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's where being an athletic director gives me great perspective, because I've attended all sports for all my career. That I've been athletic director for 12 years. So I've been a tennis, cross-country, men's, women's soccer, beach volleyball, men's, women's basketball. So, yeah, of course I'm going to be involved with the football. I'll be involved with the Simmons Bank Liberty Bowl renovation project. I'll be at every home games for sure. The road games that he wants me to have a presence, I'll be there as well. I am a huge fan of college football and love it. And college football is the key to mobility within intercollegiate athletics. So we've got the product right on the field, and Coach Silverfield have done a great job there. And I think this Liberty Bowl renovation project and other projects that we've done to support, you know, football through the years will be one of the key rationales for, you know, Power Four conferences finally saying, okay, Memphis is now fully complete. They understand it's more than just being on the field. It's all the other things that, you know, go into having a Power Four football program. So, yes, I'll be involved with, you know, football for sure.
And then with your former teammate, Penny Hardaway, who we know is going into his seventh year, where in particular, in terms of helping him in this gig, I mean, it's clear, I mean, you're his boss, but in terms of adding to what he's doing, where do you feel like you can help him the most?
First, I think just perspective. I mean, I was a role player in Memphis. My job was to set picks, get rebounds, play defense, to help the stars be stars. And as athletic director and as senior deputy athletic director, I still look at it. My job is to help clear obstacles for Penny. Make sure, and I told, when we talked, I said, man, you're a coach. I'm not. I played, but I'm not a coach. My job is to ask questions to make sure your philosophies and actions match up with the goals that we all have for the program. Because if those things aren't in alignment, then we can't get to what we say we want to do. Our actions on a daily basis have to align with the goals, because our habits is what defines us. So he agreed with that right off. And so now that we understand each other fundamentally, my job is, again, ask him questions, you know, give him perspective. This is how you need to look at this from an administrative perspective. You know, coaches have to be inherently somewhat selfish, because their jobs rest on, you know, 18 to 23 and sometimes 24, 25-year-old young men and women.
Yep.
So administrators have the opportunity to look at things from a more universal and practical look. So sometimes when you get out of that fishbowl and you take those binoculars off, whatever analogy you want to use, it gives you a chance to see things from a different light. And that's being enough of an insider to have played and to be the chair of the NIT committee and be on the NCAA Men's Basketball Competition Committee and being the chair of the Southland Conference Basketball Advisory Committee. I have a different perspective. Yep. and we're close enough that we respect each other's ideas and can have, you know, conversations that challenge what our, you know, what some of those ideas have been.
You're new to it, and so is Ed Scott. It's something that's obviously going on, and I think Ed's talked about it, and I won't ask you to get too deep into it, Tim, but I know you know about it. Just how concerned are you? And Ed said that, you know, we've answered all their questions, but this potential investigation going on with the NCAA and the Malcolm Dandridge situation. How much do you know? How much can you tell us?
I just know what I've read. I haven't had a detail. I haven't read the report. I haven't read the filing. And so I'm hesitant to say very much about.
Understood.
You know, we'll cooperate as much as possible and make sure that we understand all the facts and get up to speed as what was happening on the ground and, you know, try to address that, you know, in a timely fashion to ensure that we're being a great partner, a great member institution to the NCAA. I don't think that we'll take an antagonistic perspective at all. I think we work with them to figure out what we know and what we don't know and try to, you know, fix. Was this an isolated incident, or is there some kind of fundamental challenge that we need to overcome and look at, you know, more holistically? So I don't know if that answers it, that it gives you the answer you wanted, but, you know, I'm going to give it to you as much as I know at the time.
Talking, of course, to new senior deputy athletics director Tim Duncan. He's a Tiger, Tiger through and through, and he's a Tiger again coming back home from where he's been. Had been in New Orleans the last 5 years as athletics director. All right, I must ask you, you touched on it, and I think this is critically important. We know Ed Scott, the first black athletic director at Memphis, and we know, and you would know it better than anybody, Tim, there are so few. Just across the country, minority to say the least, just in terms of people of diversity in those positions in college athletics. So I have to ask you, when you look around at the department now, you see Ed Lolly that he just hired. We're going to get familiar with him. I'm imagining, Tim, that it looks a lot different than it did back in the day. At least with Memphis now, than it did when you were, you know, director of the M Club. What was that back in 2007, 2009?
Yeah. It definitely looks different, and it's time for sure. My staffs have routinely reflected the student athlete population, and I think that's the most important thing, right? Yep. You want young men and young women to see people who look like them, and then you want young men and young women who see people who look different from them from a different land, so they can understand that leadership is leadership, and it doesn't, it's not colored, literally, sorry for the pun, it's not colored by race. And so, you know, back when, during George Floyd, when, you know, I was stopped by police at gunpoint, I thought the lesson for not only my students of color was, you know, this can happen to, you know, black men, you know, in anywhere. I thought it was great for our students who were international and, you know, some of our white student athletes to say, hey, they call me Mr. Tim. This is Mr. Tim. I know him. I see him with his family every game. So it kind of helped overcome the myth and a narrative that, you know, some of these guys are criminals and, you know, it only happens to bad people. So I think that having, you know, leadership that is diverse, that matches, you know, what the student athlete's body look like is representative of, you know, what it should be. And, you know, I think it's, you know, the right time for this to happen. There'll be a diverse staff. Ed believes that we need to have people that look diverse, to have diverse experiences, to come and help us achieve what we need to achieve. And I think he's done I think he's off to a great start for sure.
You know, I got a 92 Elite Eight poster. I got a 92 Tigers poster. I guess it's a Tigers poster where all the members of that team signed it. And on there is Tim Duncan. How often do you go back to, you're coming back to work with a guy that you played with on those teams, but how often do you think back to they feel like the, I know 08 was great, and it was the pinnacle,
yeah, right.
But man, those were good times back in those days.
You know, what's so proud when I think about those times is so many, I think 10 maybe of the guys were from Memphis,
yes.
And no one else on the team, I think in 92 was more than, you know, a couple hundred miles away. So the fact that most of us grew up in Memphis and was able to wear Memphis across our chest and make it to the Elite Eight,
it
made it so much more special. It was something that, you know, as a Memphian, you feel proud that guys that we competed with and against you know, throughout, you know, our formative years are all pulling together for the city that we know and love. So that's the best part about it, that played for a coach that's from a city. I don't know that there have been very many opportunities like that. Obviously, the 85 Memphis team, the 73 Memphis team, and the 08 had some Memphis guys for sure. But that one was, I would have to guess, had the most guys that were from the city.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, played significant roles in the success of that program.
Now, as what you said, it just meant more because of all those reasons. And that, you know,
absolutely.
Yeah, that it just meant more, and it meant more to all of us. And I know it did to y'all. Now, I got somebody that claims to be in the know. You know, me and John are White Station boys. We know you're a Melrose guy. You came up at Melrose.
Yeah.
You're a Golden Wildcat. But this person in the know told me that you went to White Station Middle. Is that true?
I did. It was junior high back in the olden days.
Hey.
Yeah, I went to White Station Junior. So I went to Campus Elementary School.
Yep.
So I went to school right there on the University campus, and
crazy.
I thought I was going to Bellevue, another, you know, high academic school back in the day. But my sixth grade teacher said, no, you're not going over there with the friends you hang out with. You're going to go to White Station with your other group of friends so they can challenge you. And they did. And I didn't like it at the time, but, you know, she knew what I needed, and unfortunately back then, but fortunately my parents sided with her and sent me to White Station, and I got a chance to have a high education and continue my education with a lot of kids that I went to at campus and met a whole bunch of new folks. And then, you know, finally when it was time to come to high school, my dad let me go to my neighborhood high school, and, you know, the people in my neighborhood, we walked to school together. So I had a, you know, a pretty diverse background of growing up in the city, and I loved it. I wouldn't trade it for anything. I wouldn't trade my time at campus at White Station, and absolutely I wouldn't trade my time at Melrose High School. So I feel, and the key thing, I think I did the math, I never went to school in Memphis more than 2.8 miles from the University of Memphis. So I grew up around there. I went to the school around there. And even in my formative years, my schools were not far from what, you know, is a return to that, you know, kind of that space.
You were destined to come back, man. I'm at, you talked about the whole family's still here, right? They must be Bingman, you
coming
home.
Yeah, my brother lives in Houston, but my parents are there. My cousin put us on a group text and talked to probably the 20 other cousins that live there. And
the Sunday dinners, Tim, oh my gosh, the family times.
You know, I've missed that for sure, so I'm really excited to get back in. You know, get in the same time zone, get in the same city with you know, all of my family.
Well, listen, we know you're a basketball guy and everything else, but I bet you're ready for some football with this Memphis football team. Everything they got lined up, it'll be next week. I imagine you're expecting big things, just like we all are with Ryan Silverfield and that Memphis football team.
I am, man. I'm excited. So I went to, unfortunately, there was the death of a longtime media member here a couple of weeks ago, and his funeral was yesterday, and I went, and the new Tulane coach was there, and a guy introduced us, and, you know, he heard that I was going back to Memphis. He said, man, he talked to Ryan during the AAC football coach conference, and they said they hope both of them are undefeated, so when that game occurs on Thanksgiving night in New Orleans, Memphis at Tulane, this is for all the marbles. And I think it's a great chance for that game to mean something, and that's what you want to do. That's the type of hope that Coach Silverfield has brought to Memphis Tiger football. We're excited. I'm excited to get there and, you know, see his brand of football up close and personal. And plan for championships is what we all aspire to do, and we have a great opportunity to do that. And we have a veteran quarterback that refused portal options to stay and play in Memphis, and that gives you a chance. So I'm excited. I can't wait to meet Coach Silverfield in person and watch some Tiger football at a level that I've never experienced in person.
Tim, congrats. Thank you for this, and welcome home. Welcome home.
Thank you, Jason.
Yes, sir.
I appreciate that.
Always
Jason,
a pleasure.
John,
man.
Brad, thank you so much, man.
It's a pleasure. He is Tim Duncan. No longer going to call him the New Orleans AD. He is the new senior deputy AD at the University of Memphis, and you could hear it in his voice. You could hear it coming out of his pores. He is Memphis, Memphis, Memphis all the way through. Literally hadn't been far away from the University of Memphis in the time that he was here in terms of the schools he attended. Like we said, kind of always felt like he was destined to come back, and I'm so glad that Ed Scott has brought Tim Duncan home. He's going to be a benefit to that athletic department. I have no doubt about it. And soon, will be a sitting AD, perhaps whether here or at a Power 4 franchise, Power 4 program. We'll see on down the road. Y'all know how we feel about Tim. You see why we feel the way we do about Tim Duncan. We'll wrap it all up, get you set for Jeffrey and Company. You got to take a break. You listen to Jason John, 929 FM ESPN.
Get over to Sonic.
Got that $1.99 menu. I'm a value menu guy. You're going to get great value on this one. Creamy shake, crispy tots, quarter pound cheeseburgers. The fun $1.99 menu, always five items, and they're always $1.99. You don't have to worry about that change tonight if you got a little bit more in your pocket. I ain't holding against you because I told you I'll go value menu on your face. But go Sonic Smasher because it's fantastic. Tangy Smasher sauce, melted cheese, hand-smashed Angus patties seared to crispy perfection. You got to wash it all down, those tots too. Get your flavorista favorite. Paradise Sunset is good. Especially on a hot day. We got a few more coming up. Summer ain't over. Memphis Summer ain't done with y'all yet. They got lemonades, limeades, everything. French vanilla, cold brewed iced coffee as well for you cold coffee lovers. Sonic's got the options. They got all of them, and they got that value meal that you're going to enjoy. Live free, eat Sonic. Brad?
Yep.
We're here.
We made it to the weekend.
It is football time, and that's precisely what I'm talking about. I'll be watching Florida State, Georgia Tech from Dublin early on. Game day going to be on.
What time is it? I'm not trying to put
it's
you
It's 11
spot.
O'clock is, kickoff, so and I think game day is 9 to 11.
Okay.
Yeah, I think game day goes
perfect.
2 hours.
So I can wake up and roll out and watch
there you
the
go.
Whole thing.
Watch Mike Norvell. A little preview of what he's going to have in store for Memphis in 3 weeks.
I do like those Celtic helmets I was seeing on the internet. You know, they've got that Irish twist on them.
Yeah, pretty cool.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah. Like to thank our guest today, of course, the great Anthony Sane and the great Tim Duncan. Welcome home, Tim Duncan, new senior deputy athletics director at Memphis. Get ready for Jeffrey and Company. For Brad, I'm Jason. We gone.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.